This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Richard Powers is the author of 11 novels. He's won the National Book Award and received a MacArthur Genius Grant. Powers' latest novel is titled Orfeo. Peter Ells is a 70-year-old retired music professor. His golden retriever has fallen ill. Peter calls 911 and then in a panic hangs up. The police arrive. The dog is dead. But the police also see complex lab equipment that Ells uses for his DIY genetic experiments. There's a spate of deaths at hospitals and nursing homes nearby. Homeland Security suspects bioterror, and their suspicions turn to Peter Ells. The news media dubbed the former music professor the biohacker Bach. He flees in a cross-country drive and relives key parts of his life. Richard Powers joins us to talk about his career and this new novel, Orfeo. Thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
So that's how Orfeo begins, but how did this novel begin for you as the writer?
Well, I guess it began with learning about the 2004 case of Steve Kurtz, who was a bioartist in Buffalo, New York, and who came to the attention of the police because he had biological materials in his house. Although he could demonstrate very rapidly that these materials were in conjunction with an installation for an exhibition that was coming up in the near future, and although he could point to a resume of dozens and dozens of exhibitions at museums internationally, he was not completely exonerated and released from all charges for another 4 years.
Wow.
And so it was this realization of the degree of fear that has gripped this country and its propensity to blind the authorities to any other reading except the most sinister that got me thinking about this story. And several years later, in 2010, I was reading a wonderful history of 20th century music, Alex Ross, The Rest is Noise, and started thinking about Kurtz again as a kind of Faustian figure, as someone interested in creating provocative art in the way that these avant-garde composers that Alex Ross documents so well tried to extend their art. And it was this idea of what if I took this story and translated it into a medium where the artist perhaps had even more ambiguous relationships to his materials and set up this pursuit of a music beyond the ear's ability to hear and sent that colliding with the security state and the culture of fear.
Peter Ells, it's partly a story about a career in music and how he spent it. And he's neither a great success nor a failure. He's kind of achieved a middle place with some modicum of success. Why did you choose to locate him there?
Well, you know, he is about a generation older than I am, born in 1940. And that means that as a young man, he grows up in a musical milieu that still feels itself continuous with the past. He inherits this legacy of late Romanticism, post-Romanticism. He's a boy skilled in finding patterns and in making patterns. He excels in chemistry and math and also music, and that's a correlation that frequently happens in individuals. But by the time he's coming of age and wanting to study composition as a man in his 20s, of course, he quickly discovers in the America of the 1960s that a serious composer has to set aside Romanticism and push forward into more difficult, more stranger, more disturbing relationships with sound, the kinds of patterns that the ear doesn't know how to hear yet. And I guess it was this idea, you know, to have him make that difficult choice that all composers were expected to make at that time. You either have to throw your allegiance in with Schoenberg and the music of the future, a brand new language, breaking with the past and destroying these old nostalgic forms, or Stravinsky, a kind of backward-looking preservation of the tradition, continuation, bringing forward old forms into the present. And because Els throws his lot in with the former, this idea of remaking sound, finds himself in that stream of the avant-garde, performing for fewer and fewer people, these concerts where there are more people up on stage than there are in the audience. And I guess my idea was basically, you know, what is the end result of that pursuit of wanting to ask your audience to go into more and more dangerous places, more and more disturbing places? What the question that Els has to face at every turn is, what are you willing to give up in your personal life in order to achieve, to try to extend the language of music? And ultimately, his fascination with the fear of culture and dangerous art leads him step by step into this collision with the culture of fear that we're living in now.
I'm speaking with Richard Powers about his new novel, Orfeo, and as we've been talking about, it's both the story of this man being accused of being the biohacker Bach, his flight, his entire career. He's a 70-year-old man. And Orfeo is just full of Peter Els' description of music. I mean, long passages are about him talking about music that influenced him. The playlist includes Bach, Prokofiev, Harry Partch, John Cage. How did you choose the music to fit with the narrative of the book?
Mm. Yeah, well, one of the great pleasures of being a novelist is the ability to spend 3 or 4 or 5 years following the road not taken. I myself was a musician as a young man and flirted with the idea of composing and actually have a closet full of compositions that never saw the light of day. You know, it was a great delight to take these years and to go back and to listen to the music of the 20th century, pieces that were somewhat familiar to me. In fact, many pieces that are kind of landmarks, you know, war horses at this point, and then others that were much less familiar, and try to rethink this long and winding road of of this 100 years of concert music, something that perhaps made a fatal turn at some point, and instead of bringing its audience into new places, perhaps estranged potential listeners, this is to hear, to understand this man, to build up this sense of who this 70-year-old is, and he entirely dominates the book. It's a
sure.
It's a novel. It's an artist's biography. It's the story of this individual person. In order to know what makes him tick and to get into his heart and soul, I had to hear the world the way he did, which means to understand these pieces that were formative to him.
Well, in reading the book, I didn't feel as though I could understand his world unless I pulled out my iPad and pulled up these compositions on Spotify so I could listen to them while I was reading about them. Was that your intent, to get people to listen to the music also?
Well, I guess knowing that music is now available to everyone from anywhere at any time gave me some license to try to weave these descriptions that were perhaps a little more involved than I might otherwise feel safe doing, knowing that if I could create a compelling or a mysterious or an evocative description, that somebody could, in a matter of moments, pull up that piece and have their own soundtrack to the book.
Peter Els aspires to one thing before he dies: to break free of time and hear the future. Is that something that you, as an artist, might aspire to also?
Well, I think there is in every artist a desire to recreate those moments of expansiveness, of peace or understanding or oceanic immersion that great works of art can bring about in us. To feel that sort of standing now, that moment that lifts us up above our moment and connects us to the past and the present and the future. I'm not sure in his pursuit in this attempt to find a music that will outlast him, which leads inevitably to this confrontation that puts him on the wrong side of the forces of safety, that he gets what he's looking for. I'm not sure most of us ever do. The desire to create a work that will do for us what the great works, that will do for other people what the great works have done for ourselves. But that's both the sadness of making art and the great adventure of it, to have to keep moving, to have to keep asking this question: what is it that I'm looking for in making something new? Where do I want my listeners to follow me to?
Richard Powers, listeners might not realize, I mentioned the title is Orfeo, they might not realize that this refers to the legend of Orpheus. Remind us of that legend and why you chose that as the title of the book.
Well, Orpheus is one of the oldest and most durable foundation myths of the West and beyond the West. It pervades the arts. It's, of course, the story of the first consummate musician who gets his chops down so well that he can make music that that tames wild animals. He can make music that that makes even the stones feel yearning, and he ultimately loses the love of his life. And decides that he's going to go down into the underworld and charm even Hades, the king of the underworld. And he uses music to get his wife released. And I think it's the only time in the Greek myths that someone actually does defeat death, and he does it with music. And this notion of using music to resurrect the lost past, to defeat death, I think pervades this story and gives it a kind of foundation.
Richard Powers, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about your personal history, which I find fascinating. Between the ages of 11 and 16, you lived in Thailand. How did that experience affect your life?
I grew up on the north side of Chicago in a suburb close into the city, and was in every way a typical Midwesterner, and at the age of 11, I was taken out of that trajectory and brought to the other side of the world and immersed in Thai language and Thai culture. And although I did return to the States and to the Midwest at 16, it was this experience, this collision with an entirely different language, an entirely different way of thought that made my own country strange to me. And I think coming back as a teen and now being an outsider really did lead to writing in that sense of never again being a complete participant in a culture, but always a little bit of on my own shoulder, observing from the outside. You know, for instance, I had started my musical education here in school and sang quite a bit as a child and played the cello before going to Bangkok. But going to Bangkok and discovering Thai music and the entirely different system of rules and the entirely different scale and sonorities and instruments on which it's based and musical practices made me see my own music in a different way. And I think it was that kind of early split, you know, that double life, you know, as it were, that inclined me to being an observer in a way that leads to a kind of writer sensibility.
Richard Powers, your fiction and your life has this very interesting intersection between art and science. I understand that you enrolled at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign with a major in physics, then you switched to English literature in your first semester. And then, tell me if this is true, I love this story. I've read that you worked in Boston as a computer programmer, and you went to the Museum of Fine Arts, and you saw a photograph there, and that inspired you to quit your job and go write your first book. Yes. Is that true?
It is true. And I was very lucky because I did have this skill, computer programming, which at the time was a very saleable thing, and I could freelance. I could work for long stretches until the war chest was depleted, and then I could go pick up short-term work and build it back up again and then return to the book. And, you know, at the time I thought that this was probably the one chance I was going to get to write a book, and consequently threw everything, including the kitchen sink, into that book, and deciding to give it everything that I had prior to going back to work full time. As it turned out, I got lucky and was able to try it again, and here I am almost 30 years later with number 11.
Was it really that photograph that inspired you to quit your job and write that book?
Well, this is an interesting thing. I had spent maybe a year prior to that day that I saw the photograph in the museum reading completely at pleasure and finding myself, you know, turning to books just on free association. So I read a biography of Sarah Bernhardt and the story of Henry Ford, and then a collection of essays by Walter Benjamin and the history of the First World War. And when I saw the photograph, I realized that I actually had been preparing for a certain length of time without really knowing it to enter into that time period and into Europe of the Europe of 1914. And it's often the case that this the gestation for a book happens without any conscious knowledge of what it is that you're after. And it's, you know, that's the lock. And then sometime later you get the key and you realize that the two go together. So, for instance, in Orfeo, again, knowing about this Steve Kurtz story in 2004 and having that sit and gestate for years and years and not being released until 2010 when I came across the Alex Ross book and then had the opportunity at Stanford to work as a laboratory assistant in a in a molecular biology laboratory, when you know this filed away story that was now, you know, 6-7 years old, suddenly presented itself again, and I'd realized that it had been in there doing some unconscious work for a long time.
Richard Powers, you're known as a novelist, but I understand you at one time taught a graduate course in multimedia authoring. Could you explain what that is? And
well, this is something that I think wouldn't need to be taught anymore, since as kids of the current generation grow up, they're immersed with tools that allow them to create in all kinds of modes and media of film, sound, graphical, textual. You know, this idea of assembling pedagogical or artistic expression in new media, I think, is, you know, we take it in now with our mother's milk. But yeah, back in the day, because I had my programming background and I was interested in the possibilities of digital expression, I actually did teach non-technical people how to use these tools for both artistic and educational purposes.
Have you used those tools for creative expression, kind of going beyond the page of the book to include multimedia?
I have worked in new media, and I have collaborated with people, bringing my verbal skills into collaborative efforts with people who are more adept in other media. And I think, you know, for a long time, I was very interested in alternative fiction, interactive fiction, to invoke Peter Ells, extending the novel into new places and pushing forward the language of narrative, the expectation of storytelling into new modes. The problem for a long time is that those platforms weren't stable, and you could create a work of art that would be obsolete in a year or so as the environments changed and were superseded by better and better tools. But I think now that things are stabilizing, I'd like to turn my attention back and try my hand at that again.
I don't know if they'll ever be as stable as the book, though.
Yes, this is a very durable form, as it's proved over the centuries.
Richard Powers, thank you so much for talking to us today about your latest novel, Orfeo.
Thanks for having me.